The past is just something that's over.
Christopher Isherwood. Berlin, 1936.
Und es werden kommen 100 gen Mittag an Land und werden in den Schatten treten und fangen einen jeglichen vor jeglicher Tür und legen in Ketten und bringen vor mir und fragen, welchen sollen wir töten? Und fragen, welchen sollen wir töten?
On his second day at the club, Milos pushed his broom under a table and swept up a piece of Nazi insignia. He bolted upright at the sight, as upright as the broom in his white-knuckled fist, a curdling of anger and shock snapping him to attention. The little badge lay there in the dust, winking in the dull afternoon light that fell through the basement windows. Golden laurels surrounded the swastika between his shoes, suggesting that the pin had fallen from the lapel of some officer or other. Perhaps even an Amtsleiter. Milos pictured the man sitting in this very spot the night before, a fat, ageing soldier, called Hans or Wenzel or something, his beer dribbling down the front of his brown shirt as he laughed up at the girls on the stage. Milos let out a growl. There was no one around to hear him. His employer was going through accounts in the back office, and the girls had yet to arrive for rehearsal. Milos had been in bars before, but nowhere fancy like the Eden or the Adlon, and these days even the little hotels in the Augsburger Strasse, dumps to a one, wouldn't let him set foot through the door. He had only a vague idea how Club Zauber ran, but he knew how the party ran, with their hated concept of Unwirtesleben, with their jackboots, banners, and guns. When Milos bent down, his fingers hovered over the badge for a moment, loath to feel connected in any way to this gilded symbol. In its shadow, he'd seen his sister and his mother turned out of their hiding place in the city, arrested along with himself, and all of them sent off to Marzahn, an open field near a sewage dump in eastern Berlin. In a huddle of damp and rickety shacks, his family stumbled on with daily life, scratching up vegetables and shovelling shit as Milos went out looking for work to keep them from starving. Autumn wouldn't last forever. The cold was drawing in, and no one could live off rain and fallen leaves. Finding the badge was a reminder of all that his people had suffered, and how they suffered still. Cabaret und Glas by James Bennett. There were other symbols here, painted on the walls, one which a gypsy like himself had no trouble placing, much to his discomfort. Pentagrams, Valknuts and crescent moons might make for pretty decorations, but the symbols meant something too. Not that the patrons would notice or care. Milos wanted to shout, to spit a curse in the way of his people. Yet he did not want to draw attention to himself or to upset his new employer. He bit his tongue instead. Lord knew how lucky he'd been to get this job, and from a German too, when the whole country seemed to make a fashion of hating foreigners, Roma included. When Milos had taken to the city streets, his cap low over his eyes, dark locks tucked into his collar, he'd known that he was much more likely to be beaten or shot than secure an income. The owner of this club had surprised him. He stood now, the dust motes swirling, agitated under his nose. Danke Christus, he muttered. The little badge felt hot in his hand. All the same, lost property should not go unreported.
Oh, Milos, stop lurking behind the door. I don't bite, meine Freund.
Milos, cap in hand, shuffled around the stout oak door and into the office. Herr von Hart looked up from his desk and gave him a dazzling smile.
I'm sorry, Meister. I don't mean to intrude.
Meister? How formal. Please, Milosch, come in and sit down.
Von Hart, his unlikely employer, set down whatever papers he was reading and steepled his hands under his chin. White as snow, those hands, just like the fine-boned face poised above them. Both hands and face protruded from a pristine pinstripe suit, the work of some expensive tailor. Milosch was too poor to conjure a name, though clothes shops studded the streets of Berlin. Many of them were shut now, of course. The ones that were run by Jews, anyway. Von Hart wore a red silk tie, patterned with stars. His tie clip was silver, Milosch noted, shaped to resemble a prancing unicorn or something like a unicorn. Under his strictly parted ash-blonde hair, von Hart regarded his employee with eyes so leaf-like and narrow they brought to mind pictures from childhood, little elves stitching old shoes in storybooks. Thinking of shoes, Milosch looked down at his own pair, scuffed and muddy, with one of the soles peeling off like the tongue of a dog. In fact, the book-lined space with the big brass clock on the mantelpiece, the Gothic furniture and the Art Deco prints on the wall, not to mention von Hart himself, all seemed to conspire against him. His string-belted trousers, tatty waistcoat and the cap in his hands all reminded Milosch that he didn't belong here. He was Roma. This world wasn't for him. He fought the urge to shrink down in his seat. Von Hart saved him with a polite cough. Milosch blinked and rummaged in his pocket. Mumbling an apology, he pushed the lacquered Nazi badge across the desk.
Forgive me. I wasn't sure if you should return it.
Return it?
To his surprise, von Hart laughed, an oddly pleasant sound.
To whom, exactly? Should I march into the Reich Chancellery on Wilhelmstrasse and demand to speak to Hitler? Nein, Liebling, I think not.
Milosch felt colour rush to his cheeks. He rubbed a hand across his stubble, smudging his swarthy skin. The other day, a poster on a wall had led his feet to Club Sauber, and he'd found that the thin man before him looked just as grand as his painted depiction. The elegant font declared the show,
Cabaret und Glas,
and promised Geheimnisse und Wunder. And Milosch had found wonder all right, sitting there at the desk. It wasn't only the charms on the walls and von Hart's gaze that made him uncomfortable. He also knew that he hadn't needed to come in here. Not really.
I suppose not, Herr Hart, he said, jutting out his chin a little. I just thought, you see this, on the flip side?
Von Hart picked up the badge and spun it across his fingers. Then he held the pin out for Milosch to see.
What do you make of that, eh?
Reluctantly, Milosch leaned in for a closer look. The pattern was black and circular. A smaller ring inside the outer one, dissecting 12 rays, each jagged branch reminiscent of the swastika. It was hard not to look away.
I don't know. I haven't seen it before. It is a sun wheel, an occult symbol. In this case, the sigil of the Black Sun Priesthood. What does that mean? Oh, the usual rubbish. Aryan supremacy, genocide, a bastardization of Merovingian art and Nazi hocus-pocus.
You are looking at the death's head, Milosch. Now Milosch wanted to spit. Young he may be, but he understood curses better than anyone. He shifted in his seat, attempting to bring the matter back to the earthly and the practical.
Maybe an officer will come back for it. Christ knows there are so many now.
You have every reason to feel troubled.
Von Hart nodded, concern darkening his eyes. Milos had already noticed that in a certain light, those eyes held a violet gleam, though he didn't trust himself to think too hard about it.
These are dark days, growing darker. It isn't too late to slip out of the door, you know. Take the Moon's Road and head into the Grunewald. You should get out of Berlin.
Danke, Herr Hart,
Milos said. His employer always spoke so strangely.
I choose to stay and work.
Neither of them had to say why. Food was scarce, and hope scarcer.
As you wish. But please, don't worry about this badge or the man who wore it.
Von Hart snatched up his cigarette case from the desk before him. He popped the badge into the case, which he snapped shut and shook in his hands, rattling it once, twice, three times. When Von Hart opened the case, the cigarettes and the badge were gone.
Herr Otto won't be coming back.
Und der Haifisch, der hat Zähne, und die trägt im Gesicht, und Magister hat ein Messer, doch das Messer sieht man nicht an dem schönen blauen Sonn.
Before it got dark, Milos hurried home. He walked down the solemn streets, the broad avenues, as the lamps began to wink on. Tenements loomed above him, balconies jutting from dirty facades, the odd gargoyle watching him pass. He crossed the road to avoid the cafes, glowing and stuffed with Berlin society. Cigarette holders and cognac swinging in silk-gloved hands. These were heady days for some. Collar up, head down, Milos passed second-hand shops stuffed with furniture. Some in the neighbourhood were selling up, their valuables going quick and cheap. Here and there, a smashed window, a shattered door, evidence of the recent riots that had chased the Jews from these streets. Ever since July, the Nazis had been busy driving out what they called the Untermensch, keen to clear the city before the start of the Summer Olympics. Well, summer had been and gone, and many undesirables with it. The city sank into a kind of lull, basking in a dark shadow. While people from 49 nations had clapped and cheered, others had lost their homes, their standing, their lives. And Milos had found his Vado surrounded by the police, who'd forced him and his entire family off to Marzahn. Out of sight, but sadly never out of mind. The autumn wind blew Milos past the Europa Palast. The grand building, once a theatre, now standing blank-windowed and draped with flags, was now repurposed as the Ministry of Labour. The Rococo scrollwork remained, its appeal utterly spoiled. This building was a metaphor for the changing city, the darkening city. The old clubs and bars were all shutting down, the German tolerance of Weimar decadence wearing as thin as their tolerance for gypsies and Jews. Milos could only marvel at Herr Hart's daring, although he doubted that political satire took place on Clubsalber's stage in these troubled times. Even a stocking had to watch whose lap it snaked across and which hand it refused. Von Hart was an ambassador, he said. He preferred the term envoy, though he held no official position, as far as anyone could tell. And Milos had no reason to start at silly tricks. The badge had clearly gone up his sleeve. It was hardly as if von Hart used the duck. The dancing, or so the girls had told Milosh, was classical and restrained. The Nazis loved their traditions. Milosh traipsed through the Tiergarten and boarded a tram, crossing the Spree, without meeting the eyes of the other passengers. Who knew how many of the missing rotted in the river? These days Berlin was a maze of vanishing acts. He rode the line east into the suburbs, reaching Marzahn on foot well after dark. Soldiers stopped him for his papers twice, and a stranger spat at him. He trudged through the mud past the checkpoint, ignoring the smoking guards who grudgingly acknowledged his work permit, and made his way along the filthy row of shacks to the one that served as home. Inside, he found Nadia, his sister, by the stove. Their mother, Grauni, was asleep and snoring, curled up on her bunk. Nadia had a bruise on one cheek, but she did not want to talk about it. She only wanted to eat, changing the subject by rummaging for the goods that Milosh had brought in his pockets. The guards had been bothering her again, he knew, drawn by her hair and her youth, by her vulnerability, the fact that she was alone. Milosh pushed the thought away. He hated himself for leaving her, but what choice did he have? He would sweep floorboards or die. Nadia, Vestasha. Hiding his fists, Milosh kissed her forehead and watched her prepare the stew. Later, as dreams came to claim him, Milosh caught himself thinking about von Hart. He wondered why the well-heeled Meister would deign to help him. He wondered how a man could look the way that he did, as if he were carved from alabaster. And he wondered at von Hart's smile. What was there to smile about these days? Yes, he could have kept the badge to himself easily enough. He hadn't had to go into the office at all. Eventually, Milosh fell asleep. The next day, he found the boots and the gun. Milosh reached Stuttgarter Platz late in the afternoon. 3 o'clock, and the streets were already growing dark. He hadn't wanted to leave his sister, and wasn't sure about the Rombaro either, though he'd asked the king of their clan to look out for her while he was away, hiding his resentment. Yes, he was familiar, and as much in the shit as anyone. Still, these days didn't lend themselves to trust. Milosh went down the stairs to the sound of Wagner. Flight of the Valkyries marching through the dingy basement, if his rough knowledge of opera was anything to go by. One tended to hear Wagner a lot these days. The Führer worshipped the man. Herr Hart seemed much less impressed. He stood in the middle of the dance floor, his arms wheeling, shouting over the music.
Nein! Nein! Are you nymphs or nuns? Thrust out your swords, your breasts!
His tie flapped this way and that, his shirt sleeves rolled up to the elbows.
Tonight you are Valkyries, the guardians of the slain. You choose who lives and who dies. Act like it!
The envoy directed his ire at the dancers, Nimi, Phoebe and Cleo. Each girl, a blonde, a black and a brunette, sported a cheap tin helmet with cardboard and feather wings glued to the sides. Gauzy white robes hung loosely from them, a scrap of the material just below the waist. Their legs and their feet were bare, their toenails painted gold. The Nazis might love tradition, but von Hart was giving it to them with a healthy dollop of cabaret. The Valkyries giggled to see Milosh, standing there, red-faced and fidgeting on the bottom step. Von Hart tutted and strode over to the gramophone, scratching the needle across Wagner's Genius. He acknowledged Milosh with a nod, and then waggled his finger at the broom in the corner, dismissing him with a sigh and a straight back.
Now, meine Engel, let's start from the top. Ein Schritt, zwei Schritt, drei Schritt.
Milos couldn't sweep the dance floor, so he began backstage, attacking cobwebs in the corners of the dressing room. Clothing lay scattered about, discarded stockings and lingerie, which he observed with objective amusement, being the man he was. A variety of makeup covered the dressing tables, some of the lipstick smeared on the mirrors. Vanity kisses. How many faces the girls had gone through in the club, he couldn't say. He made him feel happy to wear only the one, unshaven, hated as it was. No cardboard and feather wings for him. The smell of perfume soon faded, replaced by sweat and faded dreams, and his private amusement faded with it. He was always glad to wander up the corridor and onto the stage, sweeping up behind the little red curtain. Unseen on the other side, Wagner was still galloping, spurred on by von Hart. The stage was merely a wooden semicircle, with glitter sparkling on the boards. In the veiled space, Milos didn't notice the mirror until he bumped into it. The glass stood in a broad octagonal frame, a foot or so taller than he was. The oversized showpiece reflected the stage around him and left him disorientated. He stared in disbelief, realizing that his reflection was missing. He might have thought this a mercy if not for the shock. He waved a hand, just to be sure, but all Milos could see was the space behind him, a few feet of gloomy rouge.
It's a trick, he told himself. A stupid trick.
He looked down, and that's when he noticed the jackboots, black and shiny, on the floorboards. A finger of ice trickled up his spine. The boots stood upright, facing the eight-sided mirror, and for a moment Milos pictured someone standing there, a ghost before the glass, as invisible as he was. Next to the boots lay a pistol, just as black. A prop? If so, a Luger was an odd choice. The Reich frowned on satire, didn't it? According to the papers, Goebbels had shut down the catacomb only last May and arrested Werner Fink, noted comedian and owner of the risque establishment. Nobody knew where Fink was now. Just another vanishing act. Milos didn't hold out much hope of his return. Against his better judgment, he bent down and picked up the pistol, dispelling the illusion along with any shred of comfort. The Luger was real, all right. Real and loaded. Milos didn't know why the gun should be lying here, next to the boots. He stuffed the weapon into his belt, covering the grip with his shirt tail. Would anyone miss it? He didn't know that, either. But he knew he'd feel safer once he gave the gun to Nadia. Milos snorted at the mirror. A cheap joke. He reached out to touch the glass, wondering at a surface that refused his face, rubbing him out of existence. What made such a thing possible? Was the mirror simply a painting, or... The thought withered like a balloon as his hand travelled beyond the frame. Silver rippled and broke as if he'd plunged his arm into a lake. He couldn't see his hand in the depths. The mirror closed around it. Rapt, Milos eased forward, watching his arm disappear up to his elbow, amputated by the illusion. Only when he was up to his shoulder, pushing his face through the glass, did he notice the darkness opening up on the other side, deep and infinite. He tried to push himself backwards, His other hand couldn't seem to find the frame, nor any hope of leverage. The darkness sucked at him. His cry went spiralling into the void without answer, without echo, with nothing but darkness to hear him. And, helplessly, Milosh found himself slipping forward. Someone grabbed his shoulder. With a wrench, Milosh staggered backwards, dropped to his knees on the stage. Teeth chattering, breath hoarse, he hugged his knees, trying to rub warmth into his flesh. When he looked up, it was into the face of Herr von Hart. "The Black Sun is rising," the envoy said, making no apology for the statement, cryptic as it was. "And this is where it must set."
I don't understand."
"No. But who knows what some men will become? Seeds of evil. A child pulling a cat's tail. A man flicking a switch. It isn't always that simple, of course. But say you had some inkling of those seeds, of the thorns into which they might grow. Wouldn't you cast them onto fallow ground?"
Milosh could find nothing to say. Gratitude had stolen his words. The man regarded him in silence, the air thickening between them, thickening with things unsaid. When von Hart gripped his shoulder again, his touch was light, as if to soothe the startled beast. Dropping to his haunches, he leant in close, so that Milosh could smell his cologne, a pleasant mix of lavender and spice, and he felt the envoy's breath on his neck.
"You see, I also have something to hide."
"In einer Zeit, die jetzt vergangen ist, lebten wir schon zusammen, sie und ich. Die Zeit liegt fern, wie hinter einem Rauch."
The week after that rolled by as usual. Milosh didn't ask any questions. He swept the floor of Club Sauber and polished the round wooden tables. But he didn't find any more badges or boots, and no one asked after the gun. As dusk fell, von Hart would smile his little smile and pay Milosh in marks. Milosh made sure of only one thing. This, in the shack one rainy night, his head still whirling with darkness and mirrors.
"Listen to me, Nadia. Listen well. The big one, the brute. What is his name?"
In the damp, cramped space, Nadia sat on the edge of her bunk, her hair hanging in her face. Milosh went to push back her fringe, then thought better of it, his hands falling to clasp hers, cold and filthy in her lap.
"Fritz. His name is Fritz."
Earlier, Nadia had been down to the well. Mud caked her boots by the door. Baba Grauni was a heap under the blankets, fever racking her scrawny frame. A grey knot of hair, a bird's nest sprouting leaves, was all that Milosh could see on the pillow. Nadia had gone to the well to fetch water, boiling teapot after teapot for soup and warmth. A good chickney tending her darge. Fritz, the guard, had gone down to the well too. As far as Milosh could tell, there had been no altercation, but the same old chilling thought followed. Not yet. Only name-calling and tugging of clothes, judging by the hem on his sister's dress. She was too quiet, too frail. He stopped himself from pushing back her fringe because he didn't want to see her tears.
"You show him this, Nadia. Next time, you show him this."
His sister didn't want his gift. Her fingers were limp as he tried to press the luger into them.
No, Milos, it is Mokadi. Unclean.
But he left the gun in her lap and stood up to get ready for work. Nadia begged him not to go, her pleas riddling his back like machine gun fire as he went out of the door. Their mother was sick, he said, and needed medicine. Herhart had offered him an extra shift working evenings as a cigarette boy. But it was something. Better than nothing. Milos headed off for the club, the rain, a curtain falling on Matsan. The shack chimneys plumed with smoke, the odd spark whirling in the night where the guards, he knew, were circling like wolves.
And now, meine Damen und Herren, prepare yourself. Here, at the end of this Periclean age, feast your eyes on our main attraction.
Cabaret und Glas was in full swing. The Valkyries, Nimi, Phoebe and Cleo, were rosy-cheeked from dancing, writhing on their Doric plinths before the packed audience. Businessmen and ladies, drunks and gigolos, gamblers and cheats, with their pale faces and protzish clothes, all sat sordid under the stage lights. The Valkyries came to the end of their number, legs wide, bottoms up. Sweat soaked their costumes, deliberately arranged nipples pressing through the damp cloth. Standing to the right of the stage, shrouded in shadow and smoke, Milos watched the girls join von Hart before the footlights. The laughter, whistles and catcalls made it clear what the officers in the crowd took for the main attraction. Von Hart, of course, meant his mirror, which he unveiled with a flick of his wrist, sweeping aside the draping silk as the Valkyries struck poses of awe, their arms held frozen over their faces. The officers, who sat front and centre at the club's best table, belched and guffawed, flinging gestures up at the man in the starry red robe who dared to interrupt their amusement. There were three of them, two subordinates in brown shirts, and a jowly rump steak of a man dressed entirely in black. The iron cross on his jacket and the eagle on his cap shone like omens in the gloom. Even his armband stood out, an angry blur on his upper sleeve as red as the mouth of hell. Milos looked away, his eyes threatening to burn holes in the thing. Von Hart, never one for shyness, was addressing the man in black.
They say the mirror never lies, do they not? And if my eyes don't deceive me, tonight, Club Sauber is graced by the presence of SS Untersturmführer Victor Möller, a champion of the Third Reich. Welcome, Herr Möller, to our revels.
Untersturmführer Möller grinned with all the glee of a sated bear. His eyes gleamed, chips of blue glass. He was visibly enjoying the hush that rippled through the club at the mention of his name. Milos guessed that most of those present wanted to forget. In alcohol, in music, in sex. Möller, in full uniform, served as a reminder of the times. And Milos, his lip curling, knew that was exactly the point. Möller raised his champagne glass.
Heil Hitler!
A swell of music, random and unannounced, blasted through the club, rattling the bottles on Möller's table. Then the opera was abruptly cut off, a needle snatched from a record. Von Hart hissed at someone in the wings.
But who? Milos thought. There's nobody there.
Then the envoy pulled a face and shrugged at the audience, apologising. Laughter answered him. But Milos, hidden in the shadows, had grown familiar with the smile that spread between his cheeks. Had he engineered the racket simply to avoid returning the salute? If so, his ploy had worked. The moment had passed. Von Hart was inviting Mohler up onto the stage.
Come, meine Gebieter. Come stand before the eight-hand mirror and catch a glimpse of the future. Who of the most heroic of men has anything to fear from tomorrow?
This said to Mohler's hesitation. Von Hart had set him an infallible challenge. Participate or risk the sniggers, the mutterings, the unspoken accusation of cowardice. If a soldier couldn't face a magic trick, how on earth could he face a war? Reluctantly, Mohler got to his feet, his chair scraping back. This was a great inconvenience for him. The Untersturmfuhrer was getting drunk and leering at the girls. He made it clear by making a grab for Nimi the second he'd climbed the steps to the stage, his boots clumping on wood. The Valkyrie slapped his hand away, an unconscious, long-suffering defence. Mohler laughed, a rumble in his metal-strung chest. The audience laughed along with him. Gently, Von Hart took Mohler's elbow and drew him before the mirror. Mohler sneered at the black surface, letting out a grunt as he realised that the glass captured the audience behind him, the club sharing a deep gasp, but somehow left him out of the reflection. Mohler turned, scanning the audience, obviously suspecting some trick. Was someone making a fool of him? Confused, he turned back to the mirror. And that was when, with typical flourish, Von Hart flung out his arms, his long sleeves flapping.
Behold! Your future!
There was a bang, a flash, a plume of smoke. The small detonation of powder masked the finer details from the audience. Milos was close enough to the stage to peer through the smoke at Mohler. He made out the rippling of the mirror, the odd disturbance in the glass, and hear Mohler's face, the look that gripped it. Did something snap out, sleek and swift, from the eight-hand mirror? One moment, Milos was looking at Mohler, his wide, bulging eyes, and then he had the impression of some kind of limb, some long and pale appendage, darting out of the mirror. Another bang and a flash drowned out a scream. The tentacle, or whatever it was, snapped back into the glass. When the smoke cleared, SS Untersturmfuhrer Victor Mohler was gone. Vanished. The only thing left to speak of him was a shiny black cap with a silver eagle, swastika in its claws, which dropped onto the stage and lay there on the boards. The audience clapped, roaring in approval. Von Hart took a bow.
Jetzt warst du arm und einsam, weiß und kühn. Jetzt machst du mit der Größe aber Schluss. Dann löst sich ganz von selbst das Glücksproblem. Nur wer im Wohlstand lebt, lebt angenehm.
The evening went on in riddles, the strangest one being that it went on at all. Milos circled the room, collecting glasses and offering cigarettes from the little tray he carried. He kept looking around for Mohler, half expecting him to appear from the side of the stage, all smiles and laughter, the joke turned back on his colleagues, the lower-ranking officers. But by the time the music ended and the patrons stumbled from the basement, spilling out onto the street, the Untersturmfuhrer hadn't made an appearance. In the club, Milos had watched the brown shirts swig, puff, grope and cackle, for all the world behaving as if nothing was out of the ordinary. If he'd been a braver man, Milos would have asked them, "What of your superior? What of Mohler?" But he knew better, of course.
"Just a stupid trick."
Milos should have gone home. Nadia and Growny had been alone for hours, but he had to know. When he finally set down his tray, plucking up the courage to confront Von Hart, he saw something that almost had him bolting for the tram. He passed the door of the dressing room. It was open. Nimi sat on a chair in her bra and suspenders, unaware of his presence as she chatted with the other girls, who were hidden from view behind the door. Being the man he was, Milos had little interest in her breasts and her long, smooth legs. He only stood and stared, mouth agape, because she was leaning down with a small pair of scissors to prune the sprig of leaves that sprouted from her heel.
Nymphs. Well, a nymph, a sylph, and a dryad, to be precise. Water, air, and earth. One of each, you see. Does that answer your question?
Milos told him it didn't. Not quite.
Well, Liebling, suffice it to say, mine three graces and I are not your run-of-the-mill Berliners. This club serves its purpose for now, as does the cabaret and glass. As for the rest...
Infuriatingly, he patted Milos's arm.
Sometimes ignorance is bliss.
Milos was angry, but he couldn't put his finger on why. Finding the office empty, he'd wandered backstage and came across his pale-faced employer in the gloom behind the fallen curtain, the party over, for now. Von Hart stood before the eight-hand mirror, twirling a black cap in his hands. The glass, of course, failed to reflect this.
Your act, Milos's sneer broke into a bluster. Those officers forgot that Mole existed. Yeah, believe me. No one will miss him.
To emphasize his point, whatever it was, Von Hart clicked his fingers.
Magic!
This left Milos speechless. In his mind, he could see the spell, if that's what it was, rippling through the streets outside, spilling over doorsteps and into lives. A hausfrau picking up a framed wedding photo and wondering who on earth stood beside her in his sharp, black uniform. Soldiers in the barracks making no mention of the ranking officer who'd accompanied them to Club Sauber.
Bye-bye, mein lieber Herr.
A fate worse than death, he thought. To be forgotten entirely. Milos recalled the abandoned badge, the Luger he'd found the other day. Evidence of a previous disappearance? One thing was sure. No one had come to the club asking questions. This made Milos wonder all the more about Herr von Hart, the so-called envoy. Where had he come from? What did he want? Who was this impossible man? Milos sensed he'd never know, and frustration burned inside him. Fumbling for words, he jabbed a finger at the glass.
And that... That is just as I told you. Fallow ground, darkness never ending, the space between worlds.
The envoy shrugged.
What better place to put out the trash?
Milos remembered the look of horror on Mola's face. Still, he couldn't argue with this. The conditions at Mudsan, the shacks, the mud, the hunger and the sickness... unravelled the reproach on his tongue. He looked down at his feet, cursing the times. When he looked up, Von Hart was smiling. Mirth shone in his strange violet eyes.
It isn't all doom and gloom. Look.
Milos looked. Von Hart spoke a word at the mirror. A word that sounded older than Romani, the air twisting before it. Silver rippled, and the next moment the mirror was an open door. Beyond the broad octagonal frame, trees, tall and lush, carpeted a night-bound valley, their branches a lullaby in the wind. Despite standing on the stage in the basement, Milosh could feel the air like kisses on his cheeks. A river glittered under a crescent moon, stirring longing in his heart.
What? What is this place?
A keepsake. Somewhere you'll never find on a map.
Duke,
Milosh muttered under his breath. Quite. Before he could speak further, the envoy was taking him by the hand and leading him through the mirror.
Dein Brautkleid stammt und gibt's keine Myrten im Haar.
Later, Milosh hurried into the suburbs, racing to beat the dawn. Houses loomed on either side of him, blank-faced magistrates, their scrollwork eaves ceremonial wigs. Milosh would have readily confessed to his crime, caught with a bright new love on his hands. He cursed the rain, flying into his face, his broken shoes splashing through puddles. He cursed Von Hart for his distraction, however sweet, the stolen moments making him late. At the same time, his head spun with stars and wonders. When he reached the Mautzan encampment, he slithered breathlessly under the fence to avoid the checkpoint. Fireflies flickered in his guts, carrying him down to the shacks, his shadow stretching out in the first light of day. That's when Milosh heard the shot ring out, a sound like the sky cracking. Birds took flight, squawking under the clouds. The world sucked in a breath, then let it out as Milosh ran, barreling down the track, his eyes darting across all the wrong doors, searching for the one he'd never call home, and the women who lived inside it. The moment Milosh opened the door, Nadia flew into his arms, his coat muffling her sobs. He could smell her terror under her rags. Numbly, he stroked her hair, attempting to soothe her, as he looked into the room beyond. The fireflies turned to wasps, stinging him with fear. In the gloom, he saw Baba Grauni sitting up in bed. Her face was a withered peach, her hair fly-blown leaves. His heart went out to her. Blood splashed in a fan across her blankets, her cheeks, and up the wall. Milosh wrinkled his nose at the sharp scent of cordite, bullets recently spent. The blood came from the guard, sprawled face down in a spreading puddle on the floor. Fritz.
Nadia! What have you done?
But Milosh didn't need to ask. When he pushed his sister away, holding her out before him, she lolled in his arms, the Luger dangling from her hand. Her hair, so silky, so dark, swept away from her face, and as he saw the look in her eyes, the wasps in his belly began to swarm.
Tell me he didn't.
Nine,
Grauni said in the shadows.
He never got the chance.
Milosh hugged his sister then, his eyes squeezed shut. Love blazed inside of him like a stove, and he gathered her into its warmth. But soon the wolves would come running. Von Hart was waiting for them. Club Sauber wasn't usually open at this hour, so the girls must have resented their lack of sleep. Not that the three of them seemed in the least bit tired. They came down from the stage to coo and fuss over Nadia and Grauni, who stood, shivering and dripping, in the middle of the dance floor. Nimi, Phoebe and Cleo made all the right noises, wiping away tears. Von Hart stood on the stage before the eight-hand mirror. Despite the drama, he looked perfectly calm, his arms folded, shirt sleeves rolled up, his tie held in place by his unicorn clip. Only his hair betrayed his unease, a few stray strands hanging over his porcelain face. There was work to be done, he said. Other seeds and other fields, he said. Milos mustn't delay. Milos watched, silent, as the girls led Nadia and his mother through the eight-hand mirror, each of them stepping lightly over the frame, into the magic, into the duk. The valley spread out on the other side, the trees kissed by the rising sun, the river a road of diamonds leading into the hills, into the future. The girls led his family down the slope, and before distance swallowed them, Milos saw Nadia look back and wave, her smile the first in many months.
Are you sure?
Von Hart asked, peering down at Milos. His employer always spoke so strangely. The envoy was smiling too. Here was the man, if that's what he was, who'd taken him by the hand and led him into the forest, who'd drawn him down by his side in the clearing where they'd shed their clothes in the dark. And there, with the crickets singing and the wild flowers on the breeze, the two of them had surrendered to the night and each other. Now fear had melted away, another vanishing act, replaced by grim resolve.
Danke, Herr Hart, Milos replied. I choose to stay and fight.
Cabaret und Glas was written by James Bennett and performed by Dion Winton Pollock. Copyright 2018. Previously unpublished, this is something of a spin-off from his fantasy trilogy, published by Orbit, which begins with Chasing Embers. Links to the author, the publisher, and the fantasy trilogy can be found in the show notes, along with attributions for the music. Cabaret und Glas was a Fine-Toothed Comb production.